The story of Oracle of Ages as an Oracle of Seasons is a story of collaboration. A story of two separate teams linking together to make something new, yet familiar. It starts not with Nintendo, but with another company called Flagship, and its founder, Yoshiki Akamoto. Akamoto was not a name I was immediately familiar with, but many of his games I know, and you likely know too. According to an interview on videogames.com, Akamoto got his start working for Konami in the early 80s. He started as an artist before moving on to developing arcade games. Akamoto says he got fired from Konami after asking for a raise. He then got a job at Capcom where he worked on titles like 1942, Street Fighter II, and Resident Evil 2, just to name a few. In 1997, he left Capcom. Sort of. Along with three others, he founded a studio called Flagship. According to both Electronic Gaming Monthly and IGN, Akamoto got funding from Capcom, Nintendo, and Sega to start Flagship. Despite funding from Sega and Nintendo, ultimately Capcom owned Flagship. In fact, in interviews, there's often not a distinction made between Flagship and Capcom. Some interviews will just refer to Capcom, while others are more specific and refer to Flagship. Let me pause here for a moment to introduce a few other key players to this story. The first is Shigeru Miyamoto. Him you likely know. He's Nintendo's star game designer. His first game was Donkey Kong in 1981. He quickly rose to lead one of Nintendo's key game design divisions, where he co-created The Legend of Zelda along with Takashi Tezuka. Another important figure in this story is Yoichi Yamada. He joined the Zelda team with A Link to the Past, where he served as one of two assistant directors. He's also one of the five directors of Ocarina of Time, where he's credited as a game system director along with Eiji Onuma. The fourth important figure to this story is Hidemaro Fujibayashi. He got his start working on the Zelda series here, and he currently has directed more Zelda games than anyone else. He most recently was the director for The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom. According to an interview for the Japanese website Gpara, Fujibayashi started his career laying out haunted houses for amusement parks and planning attractions. He wanted a creative career, which led to him working in the video game industry. While working at Capcom, he worked on Mahjong and Tetris titles before joining the team working on Zelda titles at Flagship. Fujibayashi was a fan of the Zelda series from the beginning. In that Gpara interview, Fujibayashi said the original Legend of Zelda is his favorite game. When it came out, it seemed very fresh and groundbreaking, he said. Well, most of all, the game was simply fun. Also, the background music was impressive. Let's get now to how Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons came about. In 1999, the first rumblings of a collaboration between Flagship and Nintendo on Zelda titles were heard. I can't say I follow what happened next completely. There are a variety of slightly contradictory statements made about these games, not to mention their constantly changing working titles. And interviews I've found are generally not super detailed, so I've done my best to organize this and accurately describe what happened. The first report about the games I could find came from IGN. In July of 1999, the site reported six Zelda games were in the works for Game Boy. This article has been characterized on Wikipedia and in other locations as saying Flagship / Capcom were working on all six of those games. That led Did You Know Gaming to interview Akamoto and ask him about it. He told Did You Know Gaming that he did not remember a deal for six games. I, however, feel that people are just reading this article wrong. Or maybe I am, you can tell me what you think. But here's what the article says. Nintendo Company Limited is hard at work at not one, but six new Zelda titles for Game Boy Color. While two of the titles are said to be based on previously released installments in the Legend of Zelda series, four of the games are completely original and designed from the ground up for Game Boy Color. Interestingly, the four new Zelda titles are produced in conjunction with the Japanese design studio Flagship, headed up by Resident Evil lead Yoshiki Akamoto. So the way I read that, IGN reported that six games were in the works for Game Boy. Two were going to be re-releases, or maybe remakes, of past games, and four were going to be new original games. It also says those four original games were going to be developed by Flagship, not all six. This turned out to be fairly accurate. Plans did change, but in the broad strokes, the report managed to stay accurate all the way to the end. Flagship did indeed develop four original Legend of Zelda titles for the Game Boy family of systems. Those are the two Oracle games for Game Boy Color, and Four Swords and Minish Cap for Game Boy Advance. Nintendo also re-released both the original Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2 on Game Boy Advance. That's 6 Zelda game releases, 4 original, and 2 re-releases on Game Boy systems in line with that IGN article. Though Four Swords adds a little wrinkle to all of this because it was bundled with a remaster of The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past. So technically we're talking about 7 Zelda games released on Game Boy systems following that article, but they're all split into 6 distinct releases. That said, exactly how many games Flagship was working on gets confusing. In interviews, Shigeru Miyamoto, Yoshiki Akamoto, and others generally refer to a plan for 3 games. But I've also found at least one interview where Akamoto and Miyamoto specified that there were 4 games in the works. Ultimately, only 2 of the originally planned games were released. So, how did this deal come about? According to Miyamoto, Akamoto pitched it to him. In an interview published on Nintendo.com from Nintendo's Space World 99 event, Miyamoto said, "Mr. Akamoto is a young and energetic game developer who says he came into the industry because of games like the original Donkey Kong and Zelda. He came to me because he was very serious about developing a Zelda game. He has great teams of developers and promised to use his best people on this project. A company called Flagship has 20 or so people who are working on the scenarios." Miyamoto added, "This project originally started to convert the original NES Zelda to Game Boy Color, so one of the titles will be a perfect conversion of NES Zelda." In a 2001 interview that originally appeared on Nintendo.com, director Hidemaro Fujibayashi said, "The concept was to convey the greatness of the Famicom, or original Nintendo, generation of Zelda to the current generation." Akamoto's pitch did not stop at the remake of the original game, however. He had a series of games in mind. "I thought we should produce a new version of the first Zelda game for Game Boy Color," he said. "Then if it went well, we could move on to the next stage, before making a more ambitious game. But my people wanted to skip that first phase and create their own Zelda game from the beginning." Fujibayashi said that he started work on the Oracle games in a secretarial role. In the 2001 Nintendo.com interview, he said, "At first, I participated as kind of a secretary that put all of the ideas together. Back then, I was only an open ear to the concepts being tossed about. But gradually, I began to take part in the actual development of the game. The first was to make a presentation to Mr. Miyamoto. I wrote a proposal based on Akamoto's concept." Fujibayashi also spoke a bit about that presentation they gave to Miyamoto. He said, "I went to the presentation with Akamoto, but it was my first time working directly with him, too. And to top it off, he told me we were going to meet with a well-known member from another company, so I ended up having palpitations. Miyamoto-san remained silent throughout the entire presentation too, so I was quite nervous. But when we finished reading our proposal to him, he said, 'I had thought there'd be many loose ends and I'd planned to strike, but this looks like you've got a handle on things.' And he approved it, saying, 'I think it's fine.'" Following that meeting, Fujibayashi would become the director of the games. In August 1999, IGN reported on an ambitious plan for the series of Zelda titles on Game Boy Color. According to Miyamoto, Yoshiki Akamoto, the head of Capcom and Flagship, wanted to work on games and follow them up with sequels 4 or 5 months down the line, and possibly work on Zelda titles this way. Miyamoto elaborated, saying, "Akamoto-san asked me, 'Will you let me translate Game 1 to the Game Boy Color?' We decided to try to transplant that game to the system and received pretty good response. So we said, 'Let's make a sequel.' We would make about 3 games to be played in any order." In a 2001 interview with a Japanese website that was translated and published on Nintendo.com, Miyamoto described being impressed with Akamoto's ambitious plan. "Back when Akamoto first said to me, 'Let's make a Game Boy Zelda,' he gave me a development schedule for the game that was just, I couldn't believe it all. He said, 'Oh, we'll just bang them right out.' I thought then that if he was able to pull it off, then he must be really something. Capcom itself must really be something." Akamoto was asked how much time he had set for development. He replied, "I figured about 3 or 4 months would do for development." Miyamoto then chimed in, "Give me 8 months and I can crank out 3 titles, just like that, something like that." The development was not as quick or as smooth as Akamoto was expecting. He attributes that in part to Flagship's process for making games. Both Akamoto and Miyamoto note how it differs from the process used at Nintendo. At Nintendo, gameplay came first. At Flagship, the story came first. In an interview published on Nintendo.com, Akamoto said, "Mr. Miyamoto normally creates the game scenario, stories, and characters after the initial gameplay is designed. If the action part of the game is solid, the scenario can be developed from there. We started by using the Capcom scenario creation company, Flagship, to create the scenario first. Then we created maps and started developing the game." A Nintendo.com write-up from Nintendo's Space World 99 event gave a working title for the project and described an early version of the story. "The Legend of Zelda: Fruit of the Mysterious Tree," temporary name, could be the biggest of all of Link's adventures since it encompasses not just one story but three epics in one game. The write-up includes a description of the story at that point in time. As described in that article, it would have been a mashup of the story from the original Legend of Zelda with elements of what would become Oracle of Seasons thrown in. The article also presented subtitles for each of the three new games being developed at Flagship. The three-part storyline uses the Link system. You can begin from any of the three tells. However, your results in one tell will affect the other two. A tell of courage, a tell of strength, a tell of wisdom. Make your choice and write your own epic. Each subtitle is named for a piece of the Triforce. Akamoto suggested the titles hinted at the focus for each title. In a September 1999 interview with IGN, Akamoto said, "The chapter of power will have a strong action feel to it, while the chapter of wisdom will focus on puzzles. That's how Miyamoto proposed the series to me." He did not mention the focus for the chapter or tale of courage. The Zelda Wiki claims that it was supposed to be based on the concept of time, specifically time of day, with what became Oracle of Ages having a focus on color. It cites an IGN article for this, but when I tried to follow the link, I got a 404 error. I found no other articles referencing this concept. Searching IGN reveals a landing page for the game, but it contains none of the notes listed in the Zelda Wiki article. I can say there is concept art for Nehru holding a paintbrush. Ultimately, she would be the Oracle of Time in Oracle of Ages, but this concept art hints that perhaps she was originally an Oracle of Color. Fujibayashi said that he came up with the idea to connect each game with a Link system. In a 2001 interview originally published on Nintendo.com, he said, "The core of the game was pretty much decided, the decision to retain the feel of the 2D Zelda games. It was also decided it would be a series, so I thought the Link system up as a way to make use of that idea. I wanted, for example, that if you missed an enemy in the first game, you would encounter it in the next one. That's the kind of game I wanted to make it." IGN reported in September of 1999 the developers were considering supporting a cell phone adapter that was set to be released in Japan, but Akamoto was fairly non-committal about it. "We think it would be interesting to be able to receive data over things like cell phones, but we're not ready to go into any details. Basically, we're thinking, if this comes about, we would like to look into using it." In December 1999, Miyamoto said that Nintendo checked in with Flagship on the development of the game several times a month. But in the 2001 interview originally published on Nintendo.com, Akamoto stated that the team worked for a year without any input from Miyamoto. "I had left the team totally alone without Miyamoto's help because I figured they'd easily be able to do this by themselves," he said. "So I left them alone, and for the first year they did nothing but lose lots of money." He continued, "So I came in and I saw nothing was working out, and I went to Miyamoto and I was like, 'Help me!'" He laughed. Akamoto said he realized they needed help because the members of our team weren't agreeing over the direction that the game development should take. Despite planning the story out in advance, Fujibayashi said both the story and the game world changed multiple times. "We began with a rough image of the game. After thinking up the topography, we created the map. After the rough map was done, we thought up the characters. We also altered the scenario as we made the game." In the end, Akamoto decided that Flagship's usual scenario-first approach was not the right fit for a Zelda game. "I don't believe it worked," he said. "Using that system, the team had to redo the scenario and the maps several times to make all the elements fit." Akamoto said the involvement of Miyamoto helped the team focus on development. "The basic programming was done. We were able to proceed in the right direction from there. I started to use Mr. Miyamoto's name when talking to the development staff. Everyone worked harder if I said, 'Because Mr. Miyamoto said so.'" Once Miyamoto was called in to help, Nintendo's Yoichi Yamada also got involved in developing the games. Fujibayashi said the maps were being reworked and redone every day. "When actually moving around in it, every time something felt wrong and we'd end up correcting it. When we were about 60% done, Mr. Yamada from Nintendo came in as a supervisor. From that point on, I was able to talk to Mr. Miyamoto. I then started absorbing the outlook he had on Zelda as my own. In a 2001 interview recently translated on ZeldaUniverse.net, Yamada described himself as the Zelda-ness supervisor. He helped the team get the right feel for the game. Without that special Zelda-ness and Nintendo-ness, it would feel like a fake Zelda game, even if it's a solid game in its own right, he said. There were many changes I asked them to make in order to prevent that from happening. He gave a few examples of how they achieved that Zelda feeling. One example would be the way we gave you hints. In the Zelda series, when you pick up an item, we always ask the player to do a simple task to practice at first. For example, if the player picks up a shovel, he or she might first dig to find a piece of heart. There's also a type of scrolling unique to Zelda that we call Zelda Scroll. We asked Capcom to revise the map so it would look better with that scrolling. In the 2001 interview with Fujibayashi, he gave examples of how conversations with Miyamoto and Yamada helped him get the right feel for the game. Back in the day, I'd played Nintendo games and think all their games had a common feel to them. When I met Mr. Miyamoto, I clearly understood that there's a logic behind the games he thinks up. Understanding that was a huge learning experience for our team. Another thing was that Mr. Yamada and company would ask us, "What's this character's name?" about characters that we just randomly put in our game. Giving those characters a name really brings them to life, and the staff's attachment to them evolves too. You should name your characters. Such a simple-sounding idea really opened our eyes to something important. This is just one example, but I feel like I was taught the secret of Nintendo's warm game feel. What made me happiest was when both Mr. Yamada and Mr. Miyamoto treated me as though I was a member of Nintendo. We talked not as Nintendo or Capcom staff, but as staff working together on the creation of a game. I believe that in the end, this kind of welcoming feeling influenced Zelda. It sounds like Yamada in particular had a big influence on some of the design elements of the games. He had them tone down the difficulty. "I couldn't beat it, at least," he said with a laugh. The thing is, Capcom had already been developing the Oracle games for several months at that point, which meant that their staff was used to the difficulty and was kind of numb to it. That happens to us at Nintendo a lot, too. Miyamoto used to warn us about that danger. And actually, when I saw it happening here, remembering Miyamoto's words is what prompted me to make the same suggestion. Yamada also fleshed out the link system between the games. While Fujibayashi cooked up the initial idea, Yamada said it was still a vague concept by the time he got involved. Capcom had the basic idea, but they weren't very specific about it because they thought they might not be able to make it in time, he said. I suggested they should focus more on that as a main part of the gameplay. I also gave specific advice on the link system, like, "Oh, this part would be better this way. There's already a Zelda game on Game Boy, Link's Awakening. You explore a whole different world this time, and I thought we needed a new gameplay system, like the linking system, to help further strengthen the distinction." And Yamada pushed for the games to be released simultaneously instead of months apart, as was the original plan. I made them change it to a simultaneous release. I also wanted them to add more things to take advantage of the linking system, since we'd gone through the trouble of building it. In January of 2000, IGN reported on planned summer and fall release windows for the first two entries of what was still planned to be a trilogy of games. By May of that year, IGN noted that there had been a number of delays with the games, and that they would be pushed back to 2001. In an interview with IGN in June of 2000, Miyamoto explained what was causing the delays. It was the link system. With the link system, we're thinking about letting the gamer play whatever game first. And what happens in one game affects another game. And with that, the variable scenario is increasing the work. That's why we're late in schedule, but we can release the games later this year. The very next month, IGN reported that the planned trio of Zelda titles was being shaved down to two. The IGN article notes the link system is again to blame for the developers struggling to make it work across three separate titles. Akimoto backed up this reporting in a 2001 interview. He said, "There were some issues that we could not clearly see from the beginning. After we started to produce a three-title concept where players would reach the same goals no matter which order they chose to play the games, it was difficult for us to see all the problems in making three linking games." When Mr. Miyamoto said, "Wouldn't it be simpler to create two titles instead of three?" we said, "Yes, of course." He really saved us. Then we moved in the direction of a two-title concept. To be honest, I think it would have been impossible to develop three titles like that. It's unclear how much development was ever done on the third title, the chapter or tale of Courage. In the 2001 interview, Fujibayashi said, "We developed them one at a time with the same team." But a quote from Yamada suggests that while Oracle of Seasons was started first, development on the two games was happening at the same time. He said, "They started working on Oracle of Ages after Oracle of Seasons was partially completed." So that's three games whittled down to two. But wasn't there supposed to be a fourth game in there? Yeah, that remake of the original Legend of Zelda. What happened to it? You'd be forgiven for thinking that it just got scrapped or even folded into the Oracle titles. Quotes from both Akamoto and Fujibayashi could be interpreted that way. But, in a 2001 interview, just prior to the release of Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons, Akamoto said, "We actually had another Zelda game finished. Well, actually, it's the first Zelda I was talking about before. As for that one, well, we'll be debating about it later." Then he laughed. In a follow-up, he was asked if he meant debating whether or not to release the game. He said, "We'll be debating it later, like, come on, release it." I genuinely have no idea what to make of that statement. I have never heard that Capcom completed their remake of the first game, but it seems to me that's exactly what Akamoto is saying. If it's true and they did complete it, then it was never released. Why, I cannot say. And to be clear, in the interview, Akamoto and Miyamoto are clearly talking about the original Legend of Zelda. They even say that there were four games planned, and that Miyamoto canceled one. The music for the games was outsourced. It's credited to Kyope, Emadachi, and Pure Sound. I think the two names listed are members of Pure Sound, which according to Moby Games is a music production company based in Tokyo. It was started in 1993 by an ex-Konami and Natsumi composer. According to the article on Moby Games, the company is credited with 27 games between 1994 and 2022. Pure Sound also reportedly makes music composition software, among other ventures. The games feature original soundtracks, but there are a few pieces lifted directly from Link's Awakening. Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons were released in Japan in February 2001. A North American release followed in May, with a release in PAL regions that October. According to RPGamer.com, the two Oracle games sold 3.96 million copies each. I find that both games sold the same amount to be suspicious and likely not accurate. I also took a look at VGCharts.com to see what it had to say. That site puts Oracle of Ages at 1.92 million copies sold, and Oracle of Seasons at 1.86 million copies sold. Which numbers are more accurate? I don't know. But the numbers from VG Charts seem more realistic to me. If those numbers are true, it'd make these games the lowest selling in Zelda history to this point, if each game is counted individually. At a combined 3.78 million copies sold, the combined sales do outpace Majora's Mask, which was the previous low point in sales for the series. Or, if you take the RP Gamer numbers as true, then each game outsold Majora's Mask on its own. Next week I'll start my playthrough of Oracle of Ages. Each week I'll go through my gameplay up through a dungeon. To set some expectations, Oracle of Ages is one of my blind spots in the series. I have it on 3DS and I played through the first four dungeons, but I've never completed it. That's the reason I decided to start with it first. I also want to be clear that there are much fewer interviews for this game, and they went into much less detail on the contents of the games themselves. Don't expect many facts from interviews to be interspersed through the episodes. There will only be a few for this entire season. I will, however, do my best to point out the many callbacks from the previous games of the series as I go through. And if you'd like to follow along, please subscribe. A big thanks to everybody who has already subscribed. You are awesome, and I really appreciate you liking this podcast enough to follow along. I am Paul Riley, and I'll see you next week. Oh, hey, are you still here? You want a little bonus that's not worth spinning off into even a short episode? Well, I'm glad you stuck around then. Let's take a look at the many working titles of the Oracle games. Now, some of this is probably chalked up to differences between translators, but it doesn't change the fact that there are many different working titles tossed around in write-ups about the games. So, here we go. Nintendo.com in its Space World 99 interview gave the working title of The Legend of Zelda: Mysterious Fruit. A separate write-up from Nintendo.com from Space World 99 gave the title of The Legend of Zelda: Fruit of the Mysterious Tree. It also gave three subtitles: A Tale of Courage, A Tale of Strength, A Tale of Wisdom. IGN, in its August 1999 write-up from the same Space World 99 event, pegged the title as The Legend of Zelda: The Acorn of the Mystery Tree, with the subtitles Tale of Power, Tale of Courage, and Tale of Wisdom. In September 1999, IGN gave the title as The Legend of Zelda: The Mysterious Acorn, with the subtitles Chapter of Power, Chapter of Wisdom, and Chapter of Courage. In January 2000, IGN reported the three titles together were called The Legend of Zelda Triforce Series. It also mentioned the Mysterious Acorn title again, and the subtitles were this time were referred to as Tales instead of Chapters. In May 2000, IGN reported the games would be called The Legend of Zelda: The Mystical Seed of Power, The Mystical Seed of Courage, and The Mystical Seed of Wisdom. In July 2000, IGN used both the Mysterious Seed series and the Mystical Seed series to refer to the games in development at Flagship within the same article. After that, the titles of Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages were well settled. Thank goodness. I'll see you next week.